Well, thank you very much for the invitation, and Chris, thank you very much for a fantastic and very much inspiring lecture. And if I have to summarize the lecture in one sentence, I think we are celebrating the success of medicine and medical science. And I think in the next few years, if we do not change, then we will increasingly be the victim of this success. I'm personally convinced that we are living in the golden age of medicine, and due to impulses that come from molecular genetics, cell biology, physics, and so forth, that are translated, albeit slowly, but that are translated into better diagnosis and better management and treatment of many, many diseases, we actually see an enormous amount of progress in medicine. I'm a practicing physician myself, and one of my big examples is Sir William Osler, who lived 100 years ago. He was a physician. He worked in North America. And actually, 100 years ago, he addressed one of the big congresses, and he actually said that never had the outlook for the profession been brighter than when he was living. Disease was studied more intensely, understood more thoroughly, and treatment was getting better increasingly. And I think Osler was right, because at that time, new treatments were actually being invented. It was the time that hormones were identified, that there was the initial treatment of infectious diseases. But actually, if you seriously look at the steep increase of biomedicine and medical treatment that we see now, it's probably 25 to 50 times more steeper than at the time of Osler. So we are now in an era of enormous advance in medicine, but we have to deal with it. And for the very first time in the history of mankind, better medicine leads to longer life. And you will probably say, well, we are living longer for ages already, but that's mostly due to better hygiene, but better social care, less wars, also quite helpful. But actually, for the very first time in history, we are now living longer because of better medical care. And indeed, when I was a resident in internal medicine, not very long ago, I did my cardiology rotation, and if we saw patients that were admitted with myocardial infarction, the risk of not leaving the hospital alive was somewhere between 15 and 17%. And now it's less than 0.5%. It's almost impossible to die of myocardial infarction. The cardiologist will not let you die of myocardial infarction. And another example, and I think there are many examples, is, for example, cancer treatments, where we have a long way to go, but it's getting better all the time. But now we are actually faced with new challenges because we are converting mortality into chronic morbidity, and even more so in chronic multimorbidity. And if you're not going to die of infectious diseases, cardiovascular diseases, and cancer, you're going to have a degenerative disease like dementia, but also things like impaired vision, impaired hearing are increasingly important, and there are not many solutions for that. Personally, I'm not only impressed by the increased life expectancy, but also, and that's very often overlooked, what better medicine and better medical science actually brings for disease management. So another example, up to 1% of the population suffers from rheumatoid arthritis. If you would look in the waiting room of rheumatologists 20 years ago, you would see a majority of patients in wheelchairs. Rheumatology was a wheelchair-centered profession. Now there is no single wheelchair to be seen anymore in the waiting room of rheumatologists. If you treat your patients with rheumatoid arthritis with the newer drugs, virtually all patients are in remission, will not have debilitating disease, and can actually be cured. But we also have cochlear implants for deaf children so that they can hear and that they can speak. And now, when I was a medical student, viral hepatitis C did not even exist. It was called non-A, non-B hepatitis. And now we know that it's hepatitis C. And not only that, we do know that's hepatitis C, we can diagnose hepatitis C, and we can treat hepatitis C very simply with a pill without any adverse effect. Only 3 months. Maybe the only adverse effect is that it's extremely expensive, but more than 98% of patients with hepatitis C can be cured nowadays. And the list is endless. So I think it is an illusion to think that this is going to be a free ride. It's going to be a little bit more expensive than it was. It's naive to ignore it. And actually, I personally think if you spend less than 10% on healthcare, a little bit of growth up to 11 or 12% is just a matter of civilization rather than anything else. There are also another couple of things that we need to address. Are we educating healthcare professionals to deal with the challenges of healthcare in the 21st century? Well, I'm only in this country for a few months, but one of my biggest surprises, and not very well understandable, is the very slow and almost reluctant approach to train more nurses, doctors, and healthcare professionals. The UK is the only country in Western Europe that is not self-sufficient for healthcare professionals. And it's quite paradoxical, because here we have these fantastic universities, we have the best hospitals in Europe, there is an excellent world-class training environment, but we are actually not training the people that the country needs. It could be an export product, but actually we have to import many healthcare professionals, including myself, to here. And I very well agree with what's said by Sir Robert. It's probably penny-wise and otherwise foolish. And another thing, talking about training and teaching, is how we train our healthcare professionals. I think the current model is a model of subspecialization. And I hope you understand me well. There is nothing wrong with subspecialization. With the increase in biomedical knowledge, I think we need a lot of people who know a lot of specific areas in medicine. But the biggest risk is that we do not only know a lot about our favorite cells or disease or organs, but actually we do not care about the rest. And that's what we're now seeing. So some of our colleagues are so much focused on their favorite organ or favorite cell or favorite cancer that they do not care about all the other diseases that these patients have. And then the patients have to travel from one specialist to the other and to the next one, and with all the ensuing problems in communication and interaction between all these different specialists. So I think we have to educate health professionals of the future, and they may be subspecialists, but they should have a generalist approach to medical problems. And I have to say the UK is already much better in this than the country I'm coming from, but still I see this as an important trend. And lastly, one of the things that I'm often thinking about is whether our research efforts actually match the burden of disease. I'm afraid not. If the challenges of the next few decades are going to be comorbidity, geriatric medicine, and the increase in acute medicine, that's exactly the areas where we do not do a lot of research in. We focus in our research much more on very rare diseases, or diseases that actually affect only a few number of people and are not extremely important in terms of burden of disease. So there is kind of a disbalance in the money that we invest in research and the burden of disease that's coming to us. And I completely agree with what Chris said about breakthrough. The major progress in medicine has not come from breakthrough. I'm very much involved in research on sepsis, which is a very serious infection. And actually, people have been looking for a drug for sepsis for decades now. And there have been a couple of candidates, and very large trials have been done. And most people are really disappointing because none of the trials actually have identified drugs that were better than placebo. But the real progress actually is not in finding a drug against sepsis. The real progress is in the control group. Because if you look at mortality rates of placebo-treated patients, there is a very steep decrease. And where it was with similar disease intensity about 40% many years ago, not many years ago, it's 20%, and in some situations even less than 20% now. And it has nothing to do, I'm sorry to say, with better antibiotics or better understanding of infectious disease, but it has to do with better intensive care medicine, better organ preservation in patients with organ failure, better nursing, better cardiovascular protection, and so forth and so on. So I think we need to change a little bit the focus of our research to better address the healthcare needs of the future. But having said all this, I think we actually it's actually a success story that we are celebrating, and we should not forget that. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much.